Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, November 29th. It's 11:15, I believe. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the phone with us. Hello, Wombat.
That's my gobble call.
So
that's
survived Thanksgiving, then.
Yeah, that's my festive call-out to all the turkey sacrifices this year.
Very good, very good. And our guest today is George. Hello, George.
Hi.
Welcome. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. Excuse me. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you about them after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's been a streaming atheist call-in video show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for over 10 years? Did you know that, Wombat?
This time I actually did look it up. So I did.
You did?
I did find,
oh, good.
Yeah, cool. I did find our show, and I think it was really good. I think Keanu Reeves is really good in it. I love the little green text that like flickers in the background, and he's like, I know Kung Fu.
Yeah,
and he like does that whole background thing. It's like, I should have been paying attention to this whole time.
No, it did raise a lot of questions, but it wasn't our show. Our show is, well, we'll tell you more about how to watch it after the show break.
Okay.
And maybe give Wombat some more directions on how to find it. Anyway, Wombat, what do you have for us today as far as topics?
Hey, today we're going to be talking about the figs. We've got a food-related show we'll start with. But really, we're going to be talking about, like, overthinking.
Figs.
Parables in the Bible. That's
not
what
pigs.
We're going to be talking about.
Oh,
figs,
we can talk about
figs,
the pigs,
figs.
Too.
It's all about the figs. Sure. We'll
what did you guys eat for Thanksgiving?
Hey, yeah, let's do a round table. How is everyone doing? George, what'd you eat for Thanksgiving? We'll start with
I ate gefilte fish.
A what?
I ate gefilte fish.
A traditional Jewish fare. Holidays.
This is new information for me.
It wasn't as good as my grandmother's. It came out of a jar from Israel, and they skimped on the fish.
Oh, did they?
You know? Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, they skimped on the fish because the traditional way of doing it here is they use like three different kinds of fish, you know, pike, whitefish, and carp. And this, they only use carp. And as I understand it, carp is a horrible fish that if you
carp
have...
Carp tastes like carp?
Well,
tastes like it sounds.
No, I mean horrible. What I mean when I say horrible, I don't mean horrible tasting. I mean it's a horrible creature. It's like having Donald Trump in a pond. It goes around and it destroys all the other fish.
Ah, man. That's not good at all.
I don't know. I enjoy catching them on a fly rod because you get a 2-pound carp on a fly rod and you've got a battle.
How do you pronounce it again? Gefilte fish?
Gefilte fish.
You got it right.
Okay, gefilte fish. We're going to have to look that up.
It's a mixture of three different kinds of fish all ground up.
I don't want to eat that.
No,
it's very good.
I don't want to eat that.
It's a developed and learned taste.
I developed and learned it. Yes.
Larry, how was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, traditional.
Traditional, yeah.
Dressing, gravy.
With your family?
The family together. Nice. Sheila did a great job, and it was awesome, as usual. And we loved it all. It was great.
Cool. My mom is my mom's up in Virginia right now with my sister. My sister was able to stay with her, and I did not travel this holiday because of, you know, the COVID thing. I didn't want to have anyone be risk. I'm in a different biome here. Biome meaning, like, you know, different people coughing on each other, and I don't know what I'm used to or what I might be carrying without realizing it. And I don't want to go over to my mom and accidentally make her sick. So gave her a really nice good phone call, and then had some fun eating whatever I wanted to eat over Thanksgiving. So I had lots of steak. I had enchiladas. I had meatloaf. I had like anything you can manage. Just like, sure, I'll eat that. Oh, scones. I had some masala chai, a whole bunch of stuff. Sure. It was really great. Yep. Yeah. And then I had some stuffing too. Try to keep it traditional. But today we're going to be talking about figs, baby.
Figs.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, this is what happened this morning. I'm sitting down thinking about, like, hey, what do we want to talk about today? And there was something that had always been nagging me in the back of my mind, where it's like, if we just sat and thought about any story from the Bible, just like any random story from the Bible, just like literally critically think about it for like a minute or so, it typically falls apart both in what it's trying to message and like the logistics of what happened and the character development of what's going on. And I think I try to give myself like a really innocent story where it's like, Book of Matthew. Let's see if I can get the actual verse. Matthew, where Jesus is going to a fig tree. And the fig tree is like, hey, what's up? I'm a fig tree. I'm out of season right now. I don't typically have any, you know, figs on me.
Matthew 21:18-22.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is like, man, I can really go for some figs right now. And the fig tree's like, I don't have any right now. And Jesus is
It's out of season.
It's out of season. And you know, like the people who cultivated me took all the figs off of me. And so, like, I don't have any figs right now. I'm sorry, sir. And Jesus is like, you will never grow a fig again. I am cursing you.
He kills the tree. Yeah.
Immediately withers at that point. And everyone's like, whoa, Jesus just killed that tree. Jesus hates figs. And and all the clarity of the world pass that down to our modern times. But
it's also in Mark 11.
I think it should be touched on in each of the gospels, right? Or they vary though. But the big thing is Jesus goes up to a fig tree, no figs for him. He kills the fig tree. And it's supposed to be, in a sense, a parable for like, hey, you know, Israel, you had your chance to love me, but you didn't. So that take it or leave it. There you go. That's what you get. And I'm like, isn't that inherently anti-Semitic? But even beyond that, it's like Jesus is a character. Jesus is described in the book, if you take that book literally true, is a person who is capable of making food appear out of nowhere. He can take water. He can turn it into wine. He can add tannins and sugars and a whole bunch of secondary metabolites to make water literally turn into wine. He can take fish and bread and multiply it out of thin air and feed lots of people.
He can't make gefilte fish out of it. So what good is it?
Can't make gefilte fish. I know. Yeah. But he can't like look at a fig tree and be like, one, he's surprised the fig tree doesn't have figs in it, even though it's out of season. It says it in the Bible.
Yeah.
But he's just like, fig tree, make some figs for me and then help me feed my friends and stuff like that. He's like, no, not only am I surprised, but I have to kill this fig tree immediately after the fact that it won't feed me figs.
Yeah. Well, what's going on there? Let's talk about a couple of things there. The Mark version, Mark 11, 12 through 25, says specifically it's out of season.
Yeah.
Secondly, it says that he curses the tree, but it doesn't die until the next day when they come back and look at it. He said, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. And it goes off, and the next day they come out and it's wilted and die.
And in Matthew, it immediately wilts. The line there is like it immediately wilts. And I think there might even be another gospel where it's like it doesn't wilt at all or something like that. It might have just been completely glossed over.
Right.
Three.
And also, like you said, at that point, he says, have faith in God. And if you talk to a mountain, you can say, go throw yourself in the sea and it will do that. Right. And it's a point you made this morning when we were talking that why didn't he just tell the tree to grow fruit?
Right.
Did he not have enough faith in the tree?
Yeah.
And himself and God, you know,
fruit. So here's we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but here's my thought while I was reading the story. It's like, what is this story trying to tell us inadvertently? Because on the surface, it's trying to show Jesus is so strong that if a tree doesn't give him fruit, he's able to kill it with his mental magic powers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. And when I was a kid, I'm like, this guy is super powerful. But in the back of my head, it's like, this guy should have had the ability to do that, make a fig just grow, or be patient enough with the tree because it's out of season anyway. It's sort of like walking into a Dollar General in April and being like, there's no eggnog in here? Where's my eggnog? I need some eggnog in here. I'm burning this place down. It's like, dude, it's not Christmas season. We don't have any. It's like, I want eggnog now. You will never serve eggnog again. How dare you? I'm like, whoa, Jesus, calm down, calm down. But he's killing basically an innocent tree for no good reason that probably is used as a source of food for the people that grew it. Like, fig trees don't just grow everywhere. Like, someone planted that, probably harvests it. Yeah. It takes good care of it.
He killed somebody. He destroyed somebody's property.
Yeah. just goes around. It's like, I don't like you. Feed me. It's like, well, I don't belong to you.
Yeah. That's another thing. Like in the one in the temple when the lenders were in there.
Sure.
Did he just try to set a good example and talk to them and tell them, you know, that you shouldn't do this in God's house? What did he do?
He threw everything off the table.
Oh, he went off and built his own scourge. He went off, designed and built his own scourge, came back and destroyed the tables, upturned them, and beat the money lenders. I mean, you know, when you have to ask, what would Jesus do? One of the options has to be violence.
Yeah, or throw a temper tantrum.
Jordan, did you say he built his own storage? Is that what you said?
Scourge. Scourge. It's like a short whip that has little things in it that will tear your flesh.
Oh,
Scourge, S-C-O-U-R-G-E.
He went crazy. Or, you know, there's a really unfortunate term called Karen. I don't know if you ever heard of this before, but like I've been watching on YouTube compilations of basically entitled women.
Oh, Karen.
Having fits in stores where it's like, I ordered a parfait 1 minute ago and I still don't have one and it's McDonald's. And they're just like, well, we are literally putting the nuts on it right now. I waited a full minute.
Let me talk to the manager.
Do I need to call the police? Let me talk to the manager. Yeah. He's like, are you guys having fun in the park? Don't you know you need a permit to be out here? I was like, it's a public park. What are you doing? I'm calling the cops right now. It's just like, what is this lady doing? There's a great video of a Karen knocking all the face masks off of Target because Target's selling face masks now, and she's like, I don't think you have to wear a face mask. I'm throwing all of these on the floor.
It's oppression by the government. You don't need to be selling these. It's Karen, K-A-R-E-N.
What is that?
It's a name. It's a stereotypical
kind of a meme about a meme is an idea. It's a meme of a white, privileged, middle class woman in America today.
Yeah.
You know, like, let me talk to the manager because I'm not satisfied with my service or my product or whatever.
Yeah. I'm uncomfortable.
Is this based on that woman in New York who...
It's probably based on London.
There was a woman who came upon a black guy in Central Park with her dog. And the dog threatened the guy. And the dog was against the law, being off the leash. He was a black guy who was watching birds. He was a bird watcher.
Just one of many.
She called the cops on him.
So the thing is, you don't just have to be a white middle class woman in suburbia with a sense of entitlement. You could also be the son of God and throw a Karen fit at the same time too. And what we're seeing here is an example of just like, Jesus, that fig tree isn't supposed to have figs for another like 7 months. Well, you know what? I can't take this.
Where's the manager?
You're not growing figs anymore. Where's the manager? It's like, you're the manager. You're God. It's like, well, you're not growing figs anymore for the rest of my life.
Where's the farmer? Next time I walk through here, I want figs.
I want figs and I want them now. You know what? I don't even want figs anymore. I'm not even hungry anymore. So I did want to say this. Larry, you were touching on this, and I thought this was a really good point. At the end of the parable, at least from Matthew's version, Jesus makes the tree wither, and all of his friends are like, whoa, how did he even do that? And then Jesus turns around and he's like, listen, if you just believe, you can do anything. You can walk on mountains. You can make things grow. You can do whatever you want as long as you pray for it. You can literally have anything you want. And so then back in my head, it's like he's giving a lecture to his friends, despite the fact that he just threw a fit. And his moral of the story is, if you pray for it, you can get it. But you just did something where you could have prayed for a fig and you didn't get a fig.
Right.
So why didn't you just pray for a fig rather than destroy someone's property? Is he, in fact, hiding? Did he? In my head, this is how the story probably went. Jesus tried to make a fig happen. It didn't happen because he didn't have enough faith for it to happen. And he's like covering it up by using a lower power magic skill, like a level one burning withering plant withering spell. And at the end, he's just like, you know, I could have totally made that fig happen, but that tree was a jerk anyway. If you pray for it, you can make it happen, though. Like that's what it's all about.
Yeah, there are several ways it could have happened, and the most likely is that it's a story made up by his disciples later,
absolutely,
or his the preachers who were trying to show how super Jesus was going farther forward. But my friend Dale. Wrote a book and wrote a page, a blog.
How Jesus Did It?
How Jesus Did It, which explains how any magician back in those days could have done it. He could have come back later and saturated the leaves with a certain oil that would have caused them to wither and die overnight. And then the next day, just come out, see my work?
Sure.
That type of thing. But just all kinds of different ways that... this could have happened, but the most likely one is it was just an embellishment on the Jesus story that was added later.
Yeah, and my thing
is... A legend, as it were.
If we take this as a literal truth, if we take every sentence in all these different stories that don't even coalesce with each other, like they have conflicts even within themselves, but if we take this narrative as a truth and say this happened, it makes no sense from a character perspective of like who Jesus is supposed to be purported as, like as a forgiving... embodiment of an all-knowing being, to be surprised that figs don't have figs, fig trees don't have figs in the weather time, in certain weather times.
Right.
But if it's a literal truth, it makes no sense. Like, this is a very incompetent, short-tempered God that's throwing a fit. You know, that's not cool and not deserving of worship. But if it's a parable, why are we using this as a parable when, I mean, if we can come up with a better narrative to explain things?
Sure.
And what is actually the message trying to be explained here? Like, are you saying like people who don't immediately give you what you want aren't worth your time? Like, is that the parable? Some people interpret that as like a message of Israel not being open to Jesus, and therefore, you know, like he's able to just wholesale wash them out because he can look for people who will listen to him. But if that's not the case, what is the better moral? And if you have more freedom to make up the dynamics of a story that can better engineer expressing a particular point of view, you don't have to wrap your whole religion around this weird fig tree story. It just seems like make up a thing about a bear and trying to get some honey or something like that.
But a lot of the apologists out there would say that look, either Jesus is a liar, or he's a lunatic, or he's our Lord. And I'd throw one more L in there. He could be a legend. And like King Arthur, Arthur, if he existed, if we found out that he existed, would you really think that the magic and Merlin and dragons and all that was real? Or was it just legend that grew up around this figure?
Exactly.
Same with Jesus.
Exactly the same as Jesus right there. Mm-hmm. I also feel like, how do I put this? We are really desperate to believe something that is true, even when it so remarkably improbable or absolutely not true. I can go to my lab right now and I can tell someone, hey, I just developed plant withering powers, right? I prayed for them and it happened, and they won't believe me. No Christian will believe mm-hmm. you that, hey, I can make this plant wither just by thinking and praying about it. Mm-hmm. But if I said, hey, there's a story about Jesus doing it, they'd be like, no, that totally happened. Like without a second thought.
Yeah. And there are people out Double there standards. Today. If you go online and look up people that are currently raising people from the dead, religious leaders on different continents and different nations, you will find them. There are many of them out there, but you don't believe those as a Christian. You wouldn't believe those or a Muslim, but those particular religions, like Hindu, Sikhs and stuff.
I'm going to throw it to George because I feel like we're leaving him out. Well, go for it, George. What do you?
Well, first of all, I just looked up the woman in Central Park. And her name is Amy Cooper, so she's not a Karen.
She might still be one.
I just wanted to tell you that what happened was that...
Sure, go for it, go for it.
She paid a price for what she did. She called the cops on this guy, and he brought suit against her, and he won. So,
oh, good.
It was for wasting police time, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But, So she got what she deserved. Now I forgot what I was going to say.
George, I'll throw this story out at you. There are stories of like Jesus resurrecting the dead, and yeah. We can talk about this too. But you know, I find the fig tree story so hard to believe just on its face value that of course I wouldn't go on to believe the raising people from the dead story. But there's less contradictions in the guy who's in control of life and death and raising dead people story than there is in just the borderline, here's a fig tree that got destroyed. How do I put this? Even though it's a fig tree that's getting destroyed, you know, which is an easy thing to do, it's so out of character, it's so nonsensical, it makes no sense, the setup makes no sense whatsoever, that it's like, even if this is true, literally everything in this Bible makes no sense. If I have to
exactly,
take this through.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree completely, you know. And what I was going to say. I wanted to ask a question based on something that Larry just kind of danced around.
Go for it.
The disregarding of people of another religion, and you know, so the question in my mind is, and this is almost a topic for a show, is does every religion regard all the other religions as cults?
The individuals themselves, yeah, how they regard it. But I would think, I've heard so many people say, we all worship God in our own way, is how they, yeah, dismiss the other religions.
Yeah.
But they won't finish that sentence and say, but they're all going to hell anyway.
Yeah.
because they don't worship in them in my way.
Right. And it's always like, hey, my, like, how do I put this? The Third Street Baptists probably think the Second Street Baptists are going to hell in their, yeah, own
or
way.
Or the Protestants think the Catholics are, or the Hindus or Muslims.
Yeah,
it's all,
I think it. You know. I think there's extremes even within the same denomination. Yeah. So,
but Unitarian Universalists think everybody's going to heaven. So there's different religions that believe different things.
Yeah, I even say UUs or Universalists would. Some would also argue that there is no such thing as heaven, or like there's no good reason to believe.
Or souls, for that matter. Yeah.
Hey, don't get Larry started on souls. This is a fig tree show. This is a fig tree show. You did, hey Larry, you did touch on something, and I just want to touch back on this again. I can't believe the fig tree story, so of course I'm not going to believe the raising from the dead story. But I do find the raising from the dead story a bit more palatable for a God story. Like that seems like something a God should be able to do, bring people back from the dead.
Absolutely. I mean,
certainly, you would think.
So what are your problems with that story, Larry?
He'd have power of life over death, you know, theoretically. If he could create life from nothing, then he could create life from dead.
But what I want to know is what happened to all those dead people.
Yeah, what happened to all those dead people? They're never mentioned again. Like Lazarus comes up, you know, he might have said something later in the Bible, but nobody ever asked him, where were you when you were dead? What was it like? Nobody goes into that at all. Not only that, but getting to the resurrection story about the time that Jesus supposedly came out of his tomb, graves, according to Matthew, graves opened up and the occupants came out of the graves and went into town and talked to many people. But yeah, nobody ever says what they said. Nobody ever puts down. We asked them about the afterlife. Nobody ever mentioned a parade of zombies coming through Nazareth. But
I'm sorry for taking this topic on the rails, but I'm thinking like that thing that you're telling me where like people are saying dead bodies rose up is like the same tone as what I hear is when I hear people say, well, no one was counting the ballots in Michigan.
I have faith.
How do you know it wasn't a conspiracy? Yeah. Don't you know Hugo Chavez was XYZ? It's like these people are saying, it's like people can say anything, just, man.
Those judges weren't having faith that it was a fraud, a hoax.
It's the same thing. We haven't changed in 2,000 years. We haven't changed. We're the same people. We're the same.
I was not raised religious at all.
Right.
So I have to acquiesce to you guys in a way about the indoctrination. And I'm just stuck on one thing.
Sure.
And that is this. the whole concept of the devil and the whole concept of hell is what makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to me. And that is the proof that there is no God. End of story.
Right.
I mean, it is
Jewish, since you're Jewish, really, the Old Testament came from the Jewish Torah, I understand.
Yeah.
That the afterlife was just where you went to sleep with your ancestors, like
right.
most of the Eastern religions do. But it wasn't until, in the words of Hitchens, it wasn't until the Jesus, meek and mild, taught us that if you don't go through him to the kingdom of heaven, that you will end up in hell. And then Dante, of course, fleshed it out.
Mm. You know, to continue what I was getting at is that, I mean, it's so basic. If God is God, if God is the ultimate of everything, why in hell would God tolerate hell at all? And why especially would God tolerate the devil?
You know, well, especially if he's love, like everybody says. You know, if yeah, God is love, not. Why would he even create a hell?
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah, or literally, I mean, it goes even, oh man, we can talk about this. We're going to go into this more in the second half, but yeah. We do have a break. There's so many things I want to talk about. Larry, why don't you give us a quick break? We'll come right back.
Okay. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, first half anyway. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Every human culture has a set of creation myths. But they're in the realm of mythology or religion or folklore. And they are, of course, all mutually inconsistent.
It seems that through the ages, humans have created a mythological framework that has always involved some kind of, often involved some kind of higher spiritual powers. And as
every human culture has done that,
as that goes away, as we know more and more that, and it seems harder and harder to prove that anything might exist like that, where does that leave us?
On our own. Which, to my mind, is much more responsible than hoping mm-hmm. that someone will save us from ourselves so we don't have to make our best efforts to do it ourselves. And if we're wrong, and there is someone who steps in and saves us, okay, that's all right. I'm for that, but we, you know, hedged our bets. Mm-hmm. It's Pascal's bargain run backwards. The word God covers an enormous range of different ideas, and you recognize that in the way you phrase the question. Running from an outsized, light-skinned male with a long white beard sitting in a throne in the sky and tallying the fall of every sparrow, mm-hmm. for which there is no evidence, to my mind, if anybody has some, I sure would like to see it, to the kind of God that Einstein or Spinoza talked about, which is very close to the sum total of the laws of the universe. Now, it'd be crazy to deny that there are laws in the universe, and if that's what you want to call God, then of course God exists. Mm-hmm. And there are all sorts of other nuances. There is, for example, the deist God that many of the founding fathers of this country believed in, although it is a secret whose name may not be spoken in some circles, a roi fainéant, a do-nothing king, the God who creates the universe and then retires, and to whom praying to is sort of pointless. He's not here. He went somewhere else. He had other things to do. Now, that's also a God. So when you say, do you believe in God? If I say yes or if I say no, you have learned absolutely nothing.
I guess I'm asking you to define yours if you have one.
But why would we use a word so ambiguous that means so many different things?
It gives you freedom to define it.
It gives you freedom to seem to agree with someone else with whom you do not agree. It covers over differences, but it is not an aid to truth.
Hello, and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter Five, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, November 29th, 2020. Let's talk about atheism free thought groups that you can join here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 18th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org, or you can go to Meetup or Google and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for a group in your town. Don't find one, start one. That's right. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They can be found at rationalists.org. Be sure to go there and click on their upcoming events to find out what they're up to. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Knoxville Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Freethinkers United Coalition of Knoxville.
That's too long of a name. Atheist Society of Knoxville. It's beautiful. Just pick that and stick with it, man.
Yeah, but go to YouTube and search for Knoxville Free Thought, and I'm sure you'll find a bunch of their shows. Like I say, they've been doing them for over 10 years. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or this radio show, just go to Facebook and look for the Atheist Society of Knoxville, the Rationalists of East Tennessee, or even Freethinkers Coalition United of Knoxville. And just say you'd like to be on the show, either as a guest or co-host, and we'll see what we can do.
What if they're not on Facebook?
If they're not on Facebook, then they can go to our website, which is knoxvilleatheist.org, and leave a comment or send us an email. Thanks. By the way, anytime anybody wants to send us an email at the show, send it to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org.
Or just leave a comment.
Right. And where do we want to pick up there, Wombat?
So it's Christmas season already, guys. Now that we just got over Thanksgiving, isn't that great? And, you know, my favorite Christmas song is 12 Days of Christmas. The first day of Christmas goes like, on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Where is the love? Where is the love?
Because I didn't get anything on the first day of
Christmas. Only get something on the last day of Christmas. I'm tired of living in this, you know, entitled country. All right. So, Loma. We're listening to listener feedback from last week's show, which was, can spiritual healing save us from COVID? And we talked about how there are so many. When I looked up spiritual healing centers just around me, I found like around 15, maybe even like around 10 to 15 different centers where I can go to not only get spiritually healed, but get a degree in spiritual healing. Thank you, Nashville. Laoma says, hey, I found 15 results for spiritual healing on Google Maps in my city of just around 84,000 people. There are massage therapists, and one is a shop which sells native art from the region. My country is in Canada, and others. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. Thank you for posting. I asked people to post how many were around their areas that they Google mapped spiritual healing. Laoma had 15. Ecocentric Homestead said, hey, my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer at 52. He decided to trust God for healing instead of medical treatment. It grew slowly over the years. When it really started causing problems, he had an operation and chemotherapy, but died with a very painful bone cancer at 64. And that is a sad story. That's only 12 years later. And we were talking about like how people will delay real treatment for like this spiritual treatment that is advertised as an effective way to get rid of real diseases, when in reality, there's no evidence to support that. And so we encourage people to rely on the scientific process, because in my mind, science isn't like a conspiracy. It is knowledge. Science is knowledge. It is a system use to...
It's verifiable and repeatable. And if it's not, then it's not science. And the only way to refute science is with more science.
Yeah, because science is knowledge. It's not another thing. It's not a technique on a shelf. It is the shelf. Right. It is the thing.
It's what we know. Yeah.
It's the most reliable way to know things too.
Steve Jobs is the poster child for spiritual healing.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that is. There are 15 places around Knoxville. I just did a Google search on it.
hey, 15, 15, 15, there must be something to that. There must be like some sort of weird mafia conspiracy going on. Hey, I want to tell you about conspiracies. We're talking about Bible stories that makes us irk a little bit when we think about them just a little bit longer. I wanted to get into the granddaddy of them all, I think, which is the Garden of Eden. We're talking about God claims he's good, claims he's love, but then does some really bad things. And in my opinion, there's no worse thing you can do than basically create a paradise with a trap door in it.
a trap.
With people who you specifically did not give the wherewithal of knowing what's right and wrong to, and you told them, and you still told them, don't eat this thing that I left in hand reach on a plant that's edible that will make you know what's right and wrong is. And I don't want you to do that.
And I know you don't know. He's supposed to be everywhere. He's supposed to be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
And know everything.
Here's the crazy thing. Like, not only did they not eat the apple, but it took like Adam didn't eat the apple. Like, he's like, Adam's like, hey, listen, I know you don't know right or wrong, but don't eat that apple. And Adam's like, I don't want to eat the apple. I'm totally good. It's like, dang, he's not eating the apple. Let me make a person that'll tell him to eat the apple. It's like, that didn't work. Let me make a talking snake. I'll tell the friend to tell him to eat the apple. He finally ate the apple. Thank goodness. Man, I went really out of my way to make this work. Yeah. Okay, you guys are all kicked out now. It's like, what?
Well, you said there's nothing worse than that, but I don't know, killing everybody on the earth. That's and all the plants and all the animals. That's kind of worse.
It is morally reprehensible, but I just find the whole setup why everything else happens in the Bible is because of the original sin. It's like you planned this all out from the get-go. And even when Adam was like, hey, I don't want to eat that apple, I'm totally good, it's like, I'm just going to name the animals. Like, what kind of a job is that, to name the animals? Like, because we don't speak the language Adam spoke. So he's Adam is literally sitting on the ground, cross-legged, looking at a line of ants going like, Tim, Bradley, Stacy, Sally, Jennifer. Like, he's doing that for eons. I don't know how long he was until this happened, but like, that's his job. What a meaningless purpose in life.
Think about this, though. God initially expected Adam to find a mate among the animals, but he didn't. So he's, I'm going to have to create him a helpmeet. So that he can have a mate.
What's going on there? You didn't think this all out ahead of time? It's like, no, I'm freestyling, baby. It kind of reminds me of like a freestyle rapper who like isn't very good at rapping. There was like a guy who calls himself the hip-hopopotamus, and his like famous line is like, I'm hip-hopopotamus, my lyrics are bottomless. And then he's just quiet for the next 4 minutes. It's great. Just like, you ran out of all the good ideas at the get-go. Like, you made the earth, great. You made some plants, great. When you start making humans in this whole paradise thing, like, everything falls right off the shelf. But you planned this up from the beginning. George, I'm sorry if we're going off on a tear.
I was going to ask what's on next on your list of questions.
Next of our list of issues with it? With
issues,
the Bible?
Yeah. No, comments from listeners.
Oh. We wrapped up the comments. Thank you very much for leaving a comment on our YouTube channels, by the way. If you leave a comment, we'll be happy to go over them. And Laoma and Ecocentric Home said thank you for leaving those comments. But we are talking about, it's all about the figs today. And I think we hammered home that a lot of the stories, when we think about them in the Bible, don't make sense. Here's the take home, though. If they're literally true, that's unfortunate. But if they're just parables and they're trying to teach us a lesson about the nature of human nature, we can come up with better ones. And I think if you were to look at like any episode of The Twilight Zone, like, or, you know, Alfred Hitchcock, or like some good movies that just speak about the human experience, you can get way more fulfilling spiritual development, if you want to call it spiritual development, from just watching good shows from people than from this ancient story that's been translated so many times that a lot of the components don't.
Well, think about the moral stories that are from Shakespeare. There's a lot of good moral teachings in Shakespeare, things that we can take away and live in our everyday life. People always say that the Bible is inspired because of all the great moral teachings in it, but you can find those anywhere, in any book. In many movies and TV shows and even radio shows,
We have a
going back forever. Okay. It's not a special source. Matter of fact, right. I've written articles about how religion gloms onto things that it likes. Anything that's good and moral in the society will glom onto it. I call it hijacking, and well, say that's us. We did that. Yeah.
I think that you know, one thing that religion has to offer in this context is that every church is a social club.
Yeah.
And
but you don't really need religion for that.
But every parishioner goes on Sunday morning and joins a group of people within which he is accepted as a member. I think there's a great amount of power in this. You know, the psychological.
Yeah, but it's hardly unconditional, as they would say it is.
No, of course. But I mean, it is inclusive. It is accepting. Right. You know, since when does somebody go to a church and get thrown out?
Yeah.
Until you mean before they know you.
Yeah. Until they realize you're an atheist trying to ask questions to their congregation. And it's, though I would say this, I think you're touching onto something absolutely true, because a lot of people will live their life, you know, if they're single bachelor, for example, they will be like, hey, you know, I do what I have to do. I go to work, I come back home, and maybe I have a small group of friends, but I don't have like a social club where people feel like I understand them on a fundamental level, if my religion is my fundamental, you know, purpose in life. And like when you go to church and you're brand new, people are hugging you. There's like physical contact. There's even like parts where you're singing. It's like, I want everyone to get up and shake hands with somebody that they haven't talked to before and go around and you just do that. That interaction is very, very, it touches something very deep in like a person's mindset who doesn't have a lot of physical contact with meeting people. And when
there is also the power of the repetition of the experience. It will happen every Sunday. You know, I can look forward to this. If I leave a lonely life, and I hunger for contact with other people, it will happen.
As people do, as humans will.
Yeah.
You know, we have a desire to congregate. But you have to remember, you don't need religion for that. You can find multiple outlets for that. You can join a theater group. You can join a community center, a charity.
You can get in a meetup group. There's a whole thing called meetup.com.
Yeah, meetup.com will help it.
When I moved to Knoxville for the first time, the first thing I did was go on Meetup, and I tried out volleyball. I tried out poetry clubs, just groups all over the place. Knoxville is a pretty great city. And then I was like, you know what? I'm an atheist, but I don't think there's an atheist Meetup group. There's no way that's going to be a thing. Typed in atheist Meetup, boom, found Larry. And I'm like, oh, are you guys still open? Send an email. And they're like, yeah, you want to come on by? I was like, this is perfect. This is great.
Or COVID, it's not hard. We met every week.
Yeah, it's not hard to find a group anymore. We don't live in that society. I think the only difference now is like if you're way out in the wilderness, you know, like you can still find like an internet group. You can still find a social club that's willing to talk to you over the video conference once a week or whatever you want to do. It's never been more easy than now to find people who want to hang out with you. And so you just have to make the effort to do it or start a club yourself. It's totally possible. And yeah, you're right. Monopolies on social interaction have been to an extent hijacked by religion. They don't deserve to have that character. They don't deserve to have that. And so we should work really hard to, if you are an atheist and you're now atheist, be open to other atheists that are around you, because it's a hard community to be a part of by yourself. And religion's waiting to get people like that on their side. They're just willing to sell them like, hey, let me tell you the story about figs. No, you're interpreting it all wrong. This is the meaning of it. Now hang out with me and give me 10% of your paycheck. It's going to be great. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. I would say you touched on Noah's Ark. When I was in Lexington, there is actually a museum built for the Ark. It's like supposedly a one-to-one model. And I had gone up there before with Boudreaux, and we've done interviews, because every year there's a protest because the Ark always finishes in the red because no one ever wants to go to it, but they're subsidized by the state. The state gives them tax money to stay.
Which is unconstitutional.
Absolutely. 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 So there's a protest going on every year, and we went there one of these years, and in my head, it's like we are celebrating basically the genocide of an entire planet for the most part, like except for a whole family. Like it's in the same sense of how people wear a cross as like, hey, this is the symbol of my love for my God. It's like that thing is the thing that killed the thing that you love so much, right? The ark is a representation of like, this is how God, you know, cleansed humanity. It's like, this is a story about how God killed literally everyone except for one
men, family, women, children, plants, animals, everything.
Everything except for one boat full of stuff.
Yeah,
if that family story was true, it's a nutty thing to celebrate. That should just be like the most terrifying symbol.
And it's a child story. I mean, you find it in every single biblical children's book, and it just doesn't bring the message home. That, you know, what a horrible thing it was.
Yeah. It's just a really bizarre thing how we're able to.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like we're able to, what is blinders?
Blinker it.
Blinders.
Yeah.
Blinker it.
Yeah.
Or just focus on the thing that we want to care about and not think about the context of the situation. It's like, Jesus has magical powers. He can burn trees. It's like, yeah, but why did he burn an innocent person's tree? Why that tree was alive, and it's not even the season for making figs. Didn't he know that? Like people are telling him that. Like Matthew's like, and he went up to the fig tree, but it's not even the season for figs. Something's weird here. Or like with Adam and Eve, it's like, hey, I didn't tell these people right or wrong, and then I told them it would be wrong if they ate this apple. That'll teach them right and wrong. It's like, ooh, that's all on its head. You should fix that. You're in like four layers of a logical problem.
Yeah.
But every story has some weird thing.
Another thing about the flood is that it's not like he was the only person on the world who had a boat. I mean, boats were invented before that. And there were whole societies and nations that had navies and with huge boats. But according to the Bible, you know, he was the only guy with a big boat, and only because God told him to make it.
So, George, are you really familiar with the Torah? Are you aware that if the Torah has a flood story in it as well, and like any of the specifics about it?
I was raised an atheist from the get-go.
Okay.
And whenever I try to read the Bible, frankly, I fall asleep.
I don't blame you.
I just can't stay awake for the damn thing. It's a problem.
I think we all go through this. And in fact, this is like the path that it took me to my atheism myself is like, you'll sit down and you'll read the Bible from cover to cover. Right. And I've done it twice, but the first time was when I was just absorbing it all because I was trying to remember everything and Bible study, just accept everything. And the second time was after college where I'm like, let me really sit down and try to figure out what the hell I'm taking for granted here. And story after story after story, from like the two different versions of Genesis that weren't compatible to numbers, which is like, this only adds up to about 6,000 years. We need more people. If this is literally starting from the beginning of time to like now, we need more people in between here. We're missing some steps here. It's like, well, no, they all lived for like 5,000 years. So it's like, that makes no sense either. Something else is weird.
You know, there have been certain times in my life when I have said to myself, I'm living in this huge cult, and I should know what these people believe, so I better read the Bible.
Sure.
It doesn't work. I mean, I fall asleep every time.
Yeah, it's not an exciting book. And I think it might be engineered. It might have been originally engineered to not be easily read, because it wasn't designed to be read from cover to cover. Like you can tell that from the way how the book is situated. Like it was made before books were even an invented thing. It was designed to be a thing that someone tells people to read. And if they have a problem, they know the verse to go to specifically to be like, oh no, here's your little piece of the Rorschach test that I have here. Here's a little butterfly. You said there's no butterflies. Here's a butterfly. And then someone says, I thought it was a tiger. And you go to that person, you flip four pages and you're like, no, there's a tiger here too. It's totally fine. That's what it is. And if you do that enough and there's a big enough organization, you can have like a couple of guys at the top who are like, we know what's up. We just need the money from the people to funnel up to us. That's basically it. Yeah. And then
what's funny is that you're supposed to be able to pray for anything if you have a little bit of faith and it come true. But none of the preachers seem to know how that they can pray for money.
Yeah.
Well, I had a friend who was watching TV in California one night. He was watching a Bible Thumper on cable TV. The Bible Thumper was in a city called Concord, which has a fairly religious sort of place. And the guy was hustling for money. And so my friend called him up and he said, tell me, do I have to pay God to be God?
What?
And the guy shut him off.
That's funny. I'm also thinking like, so there's so many parallels between religion from the old time and then just how easy we're able to fall into dogma in the modern times. And I think the dogma that that's being pronounced right now is like, hey, this election that we just had was a farce. It was a fraud. And I'm not conceding no matter what. And we're going to keep fighting. There's emails that Trump has been sending out to his supporters, despite being in a lame duck session, where he's like saying, this is our last opportunity to fight for America. Please send money now so that we can take back this election and our rights and our freedom. And he's sending it out to people, despite the fact that I think he is very much aware that this is over, but he doesn't want to be in any position of debt or lose an opportunity to make money.
He's using it like he's used everything in his entire life to make money.
To make money.
Whatever pretext that he can push out there and get support for, he will.
Right. And the thing is, his followers are sincere. The followers, despite the fact that they're a bunch of knuckleheads, they're so sincere about thinking that this is the guy who's here to save our interests, right? This is the guy who's going to, you know, help my family and be out there for me. And it's the same sense of like, hey, God's on my side. My minister's asking me for money. I'll give my minister money because somehow that helps God somehow or the community that I'm in. I'm ambiguous about that, but I know I need to give this guy money. Trump, I need your $200 because I'll pay my lawyers to help to bring this case to the Supreme Court. It's like, it's only $200 to do that. It's like, whatever. I'll just give money to Trump. Yeah,
but evangelicals are raised from earliest childhood to obey for obedience to an authoritarian figure.
Yeah.
Especially ones that are approved by the church.
Right.
And sanctioned by the church. And churches all over the country have been approving what he's doing, what Trump is doing. So
it's weird.
They're just following. They're following in line.
No, you're right. Because if you don't have, how do I put it? Independent thinking is not something that you're born with. You have to train it. Like critical thought is something you have to work on to get good at it, and you have to keep working on it.
Right.
And if you never have the opportunity to think for yourself or to assess things critically on your own, you'll never just wake up randomly as a great critical thinker. You might be calling yourself a critical thinker. You might even believe it when someone calls you a critical thinker who's just using you for money. But it's something you have to keep working at, and it doesn't feel comfortable when you're doing it, and you run into a lot of unknowns, but it's a rewarding experience because you know it's true things.
And that's one of the reasons why faith so often dies in higher education and college. That's where, you know, I learned better than just to have faith things. I needed to learn to figure them out, study them, research them. Yeah. And they also taught me how to research things in college. Right. So,
and it didn't take me until grad school to like lose my faith. I don't believe so. Well, to call myself an atheist, that took grad school. But for me to not believe in the Bible anymore, that was first year of just undergrad. Right. That was just, hey. Right.
First year, first quarter. There's a difference.
Literally like first year, like first ethics class, or I'm like, I know what morality is. It's like, no, you don't. It's like, oh, geez, this book isn't useful. Well, let me get this ethics book instead. This is much better. Oh, my gosh. I can't go back to this. I can't read this. I don't know what I am anymore. Don't call me the A word. And now I'm like, just call me the A word. It's the easiest thing in the world.
Not a dirty word.
It's not a dirty word. Hey, listen, we're 5 minutes before we got to close. I'm Let's Chat. You can find me at this YouTube station if you're watching it. If not, I'm on Let's Chat on YouTube. And I post these podcasts as well as videos called Socratic Examination. where I talk to people about how they come to believe things and whether or not that method that they're using is reliable or not. I found it's a really good way to talk to people without having an argument or debate over sensitive subjects. And if you want to check that out, feel free to check it out on my channel. I have a bunch of videos. George, what's one thing you'd recommend we check out this for next week, if you can think of anything? I'm putting you on the spot. You got a favorite song? You got something?
No, but I just wanted to say, let's all be open to new information coming in. So I would just want to share that here in rural Tennessee, I had gefilte fish for Thanksgiving.
I don't want to hear any more.
You mean the wilderness where you are?
Yeah. In the wilderness where I am, there are two supermarkets that sell Jewish foods, and I don't know who's eating them.
I'm afraid to look up gefilte fish, but I recommend people
maybe stake out. I'm sorry, you do look it up, but maybe stake out the store and watch the people coming in and going out and introduce yourself.
No, see, because I just have to share this with you.
It looks as gross as I thought it was going to be. This is nasty.
That lists all the churches in my county and the adjacent county, and there's 167 Baptist churches that I have counted.
Wow.
That's just the official Baptist churches. And then there's hundreds of other churches. Well, the only synagogue, because I wanted to know who was eating all this Jewish food at the supermarkets, I found three Jewish entries among the churches. But guess what? They're all fake Jewish synagogues. They're not real.
Oh,
they're Jews for Jesus. They're evangelicals. And so I still don't know.
It exists. They're there.
It's rough. It's a rough life, man, because it is rough. It's hard to find places that you can religion in the right way that suits your interests. I don't know. Sorry for that. Hey, Larry, why don't you take us out? We're getting close to the end of the show. What's going on?
If you have any questions for this show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org. And we'll answer them on the show. If you're having trouble with scrupulosity, that is leaving religion behind, I recommend going to recoveringfromreligion.org and find some help there. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe, or even as a podcast, it's out and available on podcasts at iHeart and podcast.com and all different kinds of podcasts out there. Be sure to like and subscribe. Also, be sure to visit digitalfreethought.com for our radio show archives, atheist songs, articles on the subject of atheism. Also, our Facebook page. We have a Digital Free Thought Radio Facebook page. You can leave comments there as well. My book is called Atheism.
What's it all about?
And it's available on Amazon. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.